We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Support for Jacked Ramsey is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you, 20% off, free worldwide shipping with a code JACKED20 at manscaped.com. Again, that's JACKED20 at manscaped.com. And why go with Manscaped? Well, Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin and body trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and an incredibly comfortable grooming experience. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. I now feel confident shaving my boys. So remember, get 20% off and free shipping with the code JACKED20, that's JACKED20, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code JACKED20. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into Jacked Ramsey's. I am your co-host, Danny Marang, joined always by Brandon Sprague. Brandon, welcome back from Hawaii. We obviously had you back in, obviously, with Justin Rowan, but now we're back in the normal groove, kind of. It's Labor Day weekend, Sunday night. You've just got home from the world's longest golf outing. What'd you shoot?
I'm not proud to admit this, and I'm really upset you put me on the
Oh, no, I saved that 100%. Here. I 100% saved it.
I shot a 97. I'm not proud. It was an awful round. It was a 5.5 hour round. It was a lot of hit and then wait and then wait and then wait.
No groove.
And then wait and then wait and then hit and then wait and then wait and then hit.
Where'd you play?
So we played at Quail Valley. So okay. I went way out in like Banks, Oregon, is super deep from where I live. But I came out to my brother-in-law's house to hang out and we thought, let's play around. I thought, you know, teeing off at 12:40, I would be totally good for a 6 p.m. podcast, and here we are damn near an hour late, and I'm just like, I can't believe it took that long.
And you didn't even get to shoot that well. Like, it's one thing to, like, have it, like I had a good day. I was just crushing it, but...
Me and my buddy are usually, like, in the, you know, like, 88, 89, 90-ish range, usually.
Sub-90 is a good day.
It's a great... I'm happy. Every time I'm sub-90, I'm like, yes.
The best I've ever shot is 80. So, that's it.
And that would be, if I ever shot below an 85, I would probably cry. So to shoot a 97, it's just like demoralizing. You almost look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm just a POS. I don't deserve to breathe oxygen.
You just throw the clubs out of the car while you're moving.
That's kind of how it felt, yeah.
Listen, if it helps you, I would love to go shoot a 97 right now. I would love to be able to go walk a golf course right now. So there is that. And it's not a guilt thing. I'm just saying, I would very much like to go. I have Chehalem Glen. I could throw a rock and hit Chehalem Glen from where I live.
Which is one of my favorite local courses. Like, it's top three for me of courses in our area.
Oh, it is. It's a beautiful course, but it's just killing me. Because it's around the corner and I can't touch it. But the sweet, sweet golf talk is saved for, at the turn. Shout out Joe Simons and his golf podcast. If you haven't already, go check out
Joe. Oh, there you go.
Look at that. Just a professional plug just for the one of the homies. But this is Jacked Ramsey's, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast Network. And it is a mailbag pod. We have lots of questions. But before we get into the questions, The Blazers are just doing a solid after solid when you're thinking, hey, it's August going into September. The suck factor is going to be high because you're going to have to claw and scrape to get something new. They give us two little nuggets of new. New nuggets. We're not talking fast food here. Dennis Smith Jr., another point guard, which has got people very angry.
Why has he got people angry? Because
he's another, like, well, it's another 6'3 guard. So people are very, very mad about that. And then there's also the addition of Marquese Chris. I should say, not the addition. Both of these guys are on training camp contracts, which, let's take this back for a second. I had Phil Beckner on the pod, a month ago, and one of the things we talked about was how hard it is to stay in the NBA and why players spend more time becoming good to great at something than they do becoming okay to good or average at something. And if you look at guys like Marquese Chris and Dennis Smith Jr., what are their skills? Do they have an elite skill that they can bank on? And I think no is the answer. And that's why they're taking training camp invites when they were both lottery picks. You know, you had Marquese Chris in 2016, the eighth overall pick, and Dennis Smith Jr., the ninth overall pick in 2017. And that's a kick in the teeth, man. Like, you've got top 20 players in the NBA, and then after that you've got your really, really good near all-stars for about 25 players. Then after that you've got your good role players, and then after that, that's the churn. Like, there's 450 guys in the NBA. There's a little bit more now. Let's call it like 480 when you get the two ways and minimum contract. But look at how many minimum guys are good players now.
Yeah.
Right? You saw CJ McCollum talk about this, or I shouldn't say talk about it, dance around this as the new MBPA president. But like the whole idea of that NBA middle class disappearing, and either you're a big fish, you're maybe getting that next contract a la Norman Powell, Gary Trent Jr., that $20 million. And then there's the guys after that, like the Robert Covingtons of the world who get that MLE-ish money and Nurk. And then after that, who knows? Like the $6, $7, $8 million guys outside of like the rookie scale top 10 picks, those kind of guys, that the money just isn't there anymore. It's kind of weird. So these guys like top-tier lottery picks like Dennis Smith Jr. and Marquese Chris, they're damn near out of the league. Like, when you look at that, like, when you see Dennis Smith Jr. and Marquese Chris are training camp invites, when that pops up on your phone, what's the first thing you think about?
Well, first of all, I think it's name recognition for me because they were just drafted what feels like a year ago, right? Like, when you think of Dennis Smith Jr., I remember him coming out, and I think we've talked about this off the air. We both were people that I liked him. You saw the tape, you'd read about him, you thought, okay, he's 6'3", but he plays a little longer, he's more athletic. I like the potential in that. Marquese Chris we saw here in our own backyard in the Pacific Northwest. The thing about that, though, is I feel like not that long ago, we would evaluate players going into drafts or in free agency, and you would say, well, he's a super athletic freak. Mm-hmm. And that almost used to be viewed as a skill set. In some ways, it still kind of is. But now I feel like the way the NBA is evolving, you have to have an actual discernible skill set that actually helps on the court, because being an athlete's great, but Marquese Chris is one of those. I wasn't sure coming out of college. I didn't really like Phoenix drafted him. I wasn't really sure how good or bad he was going to be, because when I watched him in college, all I saw was an athletic freak who rebounded and had put back dunks. Dennis Smith Jr. was a dude that I thought was going to be a better shooter. I thought he'd be able to handle the rock a little better.
Inconsistency was his issue.
His inconsistencies is really what plagued him. Marquese Chris didn't really quite have that skill set. So what I think I've seen the last couple of years is, though it's a very high-level skilled league, and we've known that forever,
it's getting higher.
It's getting even higher, and it's crazy because it feels like just yesterday, people like Derek Jones Jr., who Blazers just traded, Dennis Smith Jr., you'd be like, hey, what's he good at? Well, he's a really freak athlete, and you'd kind of get excited about that. Now, it's like if he can't shoot the ball and he's not an amazing screen setter or great on defense, I don't really know if I care all that much. So when I saw these pickups, I mean, I hope we can pick up one of them, if not both. But when I saw the pickups, I thought, you know what? It's not bad to take a chance on guys who might be super desperate to stay in the league.
And that's the thing is that, first of all, the Dennis Smith Jr. stuff, I know a lot of people were frustrated. Like, oh, it's another 6'3 point guard. Guys, it's the 14th roster spot. These guys aren't supposed to play. These are break glass in case of emergency stuff.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Like, it's... Everybody's like, oh, if you're the Blazers, you can't land the big fish. You got to win on the margins. The margins are much further up the roster. That's... And this, like... I have plenty of things to throw Neil Olshey under the bus for. The list is plenty long. This is not one of them. This is like the whole Greg Brown, the third thing. Like, he drafted a project in the second round. Like, that's not a bad thing. You do not need to conflate drafting a kid, taking a flyer on somebody at the back end of the roster. Like, those are things that, as a good GM or a good president, you should do. And if you want to be frustrated about things, be frustrated about the things at the front end of the roster. Like, mm-hmm. Save the anger for the other guys, because they're just trying to make a team, man. Like, those dudes are just, like, you hope somebody hits. But you go look at every title team ever. Nobody gives a damn about the 14th and 15th guy. Nobody. They don't play. If we're talking about 10, 11, 12... then you can maybe make a little bit of an argument. If you're talking about 7, 8, 9, yes. Now you can be irritated. Now you can go, and there's levels to this stuff. So the Blazers taking a flyer on these guys is a good thing. Now, I don't like it in the sense of, now you got to give Neil credit, because, you know, he's going to sell, these guys were lottery picks, you know, because that's what Neil does. And you can hear the media day press conference. You know, hey, Dennis Smith Jr., he's a really explosive young talent. We're glad to have him in camp and see what he can do for the team. Marquise Chris, local guy, we're very familiar with him.
These are players we evaluated, you know, because you have to be ready in the draft just in case. Uh-huh. We like the draft,
if we had fallen to us, we had taken a look at him. We had him ranked very highly on our board. We've done this long enough, we know how it would go.
My thing is, what you said there, it's like, what are the top-end moves that he made or didn't make? That's how you evaluate it, because largely this league is going to be predicated on who your top six players are, and everything else is filler, and it's just really background noise. I have no problem with what Neil Olshey did with Dennis Smith Jr. and Marquise Chris, but I'm not evaluating him on those moves. I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, you know, let's grade it, and I'm going to give him a good grade because he picked them up. He had nothing to work with in a couple roster spots. He picked up guys that are in desperate need of jobs. Okay, fine. But I'm going to evaluate him more on what he did or did not do near the top half, and we all know what he has not done at the top half. So that's how I evaluate it, more so than going, what did he do for our 14th, 13th, and 15th type guys?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that you and I agree on this in this regard. I'm not sure if we'll agree here.
Okay.
Who would you rather have?
Between who?
Between Dennis Smith Jr. and Marquise Chris. Because you only got one spot. I mean, technically you have two, but we both know they're not carrying both.
I think the difficult thing in picking between them is knowing what the future holds, right? So mm-hmm. if you were to tell me Nurk plays his usual amount of games, Cody Zeller plays his usual amount of games.
How many games is that, Brandon?
It's not 82. Dan, it's not 82. I'm not even sure it's 72. In fact, I'm hoping it's 70 for Zeller.
70 is the cutoff, I think, for any hopes and dreams. So Nurk is the most he's ever played is 79. And that was his first full year in Portland. Zeller has played 82, but it was his rookie year and he only started 3 games.
I think because of my coworker tweeting out what Dennis Smith Jr. tweeted out months and months and years ago, I am obligated to say Dennis Smith Jr. in this setting, because I want to see him slang wood at the Moda Center against the Sacramento Kings one night when CJ or Dame decides not to play.
Listen, the first chance, if he signs, if he makes the team, if he throws an absolute dime, if he dunks on somebody and puts his on somebody's face,
you're going to tweet a D-pick.
Oh, my. Well, D-picks, they're just Danny picks. That's what they are.
We have a listener asking for nudity. Yeah. I feel like that's the only way to bring the nudity out is if Dennis Smith Jr. is slinging wood all over the Sacramento Kings.
Well, this is Jack Ramsey's, and then we're going to have a new segment called Slinging Wood.
Slinging Wood. I wouldn't be mad at that. We could talk about the all-time great trailblazer, Dennis Smith Jr., even if he doesn't make the roster.
It'd be great because then we just casually mention that every now and then. It'll be brought to you by Par Lumber.
Right. Need a 2x4 and it's not in your pants? Call Par Lumber.
But yeah, I mean, like, I'm with you on, like, the entertainment value.
Yeah.
It also gives some, like, viable point guard insurance, because if Dame goes down for any period, if CJ goes down for any period, it's all hands on, like, that second unit when CJ went down, playmaking, gone.
Bye-bye.
Cantor, nope. Melo, nope. No. Ant, shot creation for himself, still working on the other stuff.
Right.
You just looked at it and you're like, nah, this is a disaster. Nance is going to alleviate some of that, but you can't sit there and have him run the second unit. Like, he's a great greaser of the team. We talked about with Justin Rowan. If you guys haven't watched it, we had an
Please
hour.
Go listen to that
it was,
pod.
It was an hour and a half of Justin.
Oh, it was amazing stuff.
We talked about Larry Nance Jr. pretty much endlessly.
He gave us great content.
Yeah, no, he's had Larry on the Chase Down podcast before, and Larry's a great dude. And they've had, yep. he's covered him his entire time in Portland or in Cleveland, so he's got some great insight on him. I'm going to go the other way here.
Okay.
I'm going to go Marquese Chriss. And that is because of exactly what we talked about in the whole, how many games will they play? I don't trust Nurk to stay healthy. And it's just, it's not like I'm like, oh, he's frail and broken. No, he's 7 foot, 300 pounds. Those guys, Shaquille O'Neal is the only guy in NBA history to play a consistent career at that size up until like what, year 14?
Yeah.
And not criminally miss games. He's the only guy ever. That's it. That's the list. When you get to like holy crap sized, it's you just your body falls apart. I mean, you look at Joel Embiid, you look at Yao Ming, you look at oh my god, Greg Oden. Like it's just when you get that big, it's just not possible. And Zeller is not a small human being. Like he's a true 7 footer, but he's not nearly as bulky. But when you the second you cross like 6'10", That is exactly like the threshold of like, not good. See, that's pro move right there. Sneak in the back door and then not make a sound and then
I don't even know who that it was. Probably my sister-in-law not knowing I'm in her bedroom doing a podcast.
Just it was almost we could have had the meme there if you were over a little bit where she was like, oh.
I'm going to slide this way now and block a door.
No, it's perfect. I love it.
Just in case. No, but you're right. And even with Zeller, like Zeller's not as big as Nurk. But if you just go look at.
He's played 60 games. Like that's the magic number.
But he's lucky to play 60. Yeah. The last 4 years, I don't know if he's played more than 60. So it's like, man,
Nance. Nance has never played more than 66.
And I don't blame you for picking Chris overall. I mean, I'll admit, you're probably right here. I'm just also thinking about the other side where we just watched CJ go down, and I was thinking, if Ann isn't ready to be distributor, kind of.
Zoinks?
Yeah, like who's – I don't know who's leading that unit. So I don't know if there's a wrong answer here. You're probably more right because bigs are more likely to miss time versus CJ, but
– For the most part
– They're both probably needed.
Yeah, they are. They should roster them both. But we know they're not going to because they need to keep the roster spots open for flexibility because they've done really well with using those in the past.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough of that part of it. And that does touch on – I think there's a couple questions in here. You know what? Screw it. I'm gonna hit – this is one kind of pertains to this, but it goes to the next stage.
Okay.
This is come from Colin Pettit. At Colin Pettit, what's your guys' thoughts on the battle for the 14th roster spot between DSJ and Chris? We've already kind of hit on that. Here's, I think, the next part of this. Do you think they'll bring in a third or a fourth younger guy as well? Where do you think? Are they going to bring in somebody else in the camp invite? That's two, like, names, but I feel like they'll probably bring in one or two more.
If they do, it's going to be somebody I probably have to Google. It's not gonna. I don't think it's gonna be anything.
You won't
like,
have to just Google Neil Olshay prospect.
I mean, yeah, that's always a safe bet. Is just go with Neil Olshay guys, right? In some capacity. I mean,
you're gonna find out Chauncey's suiting back up for the 15th roster spot.
Well, I'm not trying to get ahead here. We don't need to dive into this part of my answer here, but just kind of your general thoughts quick as possible. And we can maybe get to questions related to this later. Are they done? Are they done making moves? That is the million-dollar question, and I know how I feel.
Yeah.
But I think you need to be honest and reasonable and say it's not done yet. The offseason's not completely over for them yet. Camp starts in a couple weeks.
We have actual basketball in like 30 days.
It's a wait and see. I know. It's a wait and see situation. And I think if you have a no answer to that, then yeah, you're probably going to say they'll pick up some random that nobody really knows that much about. But if you think they're still going to make a trade in the obvious direction, that changes everything.
That changes literally everything that you're doing. And let's be honest. This from Jimbo at Jimmy0726. I hope the question at Monday's presser can be asked. Does a changing staff take any responsibility for the loss? If yes, what is being done to not make those decisions again? Brandon, I think your retweet got a Oregon State question in here. Please explain what the hell happened with your Beavers.
Poor play calling and execution and bad decision making at quarterback. I mean, if you really want to get into it, we can, but we don't need to because this is Jack Ramsey's. But I'm sorry about that mishap.
I love that somebody was so pissed off at Oregon State. They're like, you know what, Brandon? I know you do a basketball podcast, but here's my Beavers question.
They should have won the game. I mean, I'm sorry. They had opportunities. They made the wrong decision at quarterback, and they made a switch way too late.
That sounds exactly like every other team in the Pac-12 North.
I mean, it literally was the Pac-12 weekend summed up, right? It was just like
wrong damn quarterback. Bad decision making. Like
coaches were kind of bums.
Like, you literally could insert that for every single Pac-12 North team this weekend.
God bless UCLA, right, Danny?
You're a monster. God. It sucks because Coach O went in there talking a whole heap of trash to the UCLA fans.
The sissy blue shirt.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that.
I was
like,
good for you, Coach O.
He's got the USC ties, right?
Oh, so yeah. He knows that rivalry. You know, he knows it real well. All that matters is USC won and on to the next, all right?
Tune in to Dirt and Sprague tomorrow, and I'll answer that Oregon State question.
Perfect. That'll tee it up for tomorrow. I love it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here we go. This from Austin at Austin951-05850. Do not call that number. Is there any historical precedent for a center dramatically increasing his finishing around the rim? It seems like for us to be a potential contending team, Nurk needs to drastically improve around the rim.
This is an answer for you because you dive into the numbers of this stuff. I can't tell you whether that's precedent that a guy is going to change everything. I would say no, but I don't know it.
Guys have gotten better finishing, but at the center position in particular, it's usually like, oh, I'm big, so therefore I'm good at this. Guys that are bad around the rim are typically bad around the rim. You don't see guys improve, particularly the big man position, because guess what? They're just big. They don't have like this elite level, nimble, fluid movement, where you're attacking downhill. Like Dame was really bad as a finisher coming into the league as far as like a top level guy. He spent 2 years really working on it, and now he's solid. He's not great. He's not Kyrie or Steph, but he's pretty damn good in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of jumps you see is typically with guards or wings. Shooting itself is probably the easiest, this again, easiest air quotes, skill to improve incrementally, but that's different from finishing. It's usually a combination of touch, footwork, balance, body control, strength, all of things Nurk, like when he puts it all together, you're like, oh, that looks like an all-star big, right? Like when you see him flash a move and then just show just absolute finesse on a finish, you're like, oh, that's gorgeous, Nurk. Where the hell is that? And then, you see the flip shots, and it's not about skill or talent with Nurk. It's about, again, consistency. And historically, there's not a ton of precedence. You either have it or you don't. Getting better incrementally, yes, there have been examples of that. But like going from one of the worst finishers in the league amongst big men to like average, above average, doesn't typically happen. I mean, Andre Drummond made a career out of being a bad finisher.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of how it goes. Unfortunately, that's how that was said. All right, this is the big banner question, obviously, outside of the two additions. This from Forsure, at Forsure. Just lie to us and tell us Olshay would consider a trade for Simmons, even though we know he won't. It's like telling your kids Santa is coming. Where do you fall on the Simmons stuff right now?
I mean, where I fall is if Morey's desperate enough, please make the move. It's negligent if you don't even make the phone call. And I'm afraid he's not even making the phone call because Daryl's probably going to say, hey, let's start with Dame. And Neil's going to want to hang the phone up. And then he's going to go, okay, don't twist my arm. What do you think about CJ? And then Neil's going to want to hang the phone up. And that's the mistake. And that is ultimately, I hope to be wrong on this. I never have a problem being wrong, but I don't have any faith that he's doing his actual job, which is calling to a desperate team who does not want to be in training camp with a guy who's not there and bitching and moaning on the side. It's a bad look. And unfortunately,
it's a disaster for in that respect.
It's an absolute disaster because now players are going to be asked about it. Doc's going to be asked about it. Somebody's going to have some snipey answer because they're going to be like, I'm done answering these questions, but you've got to ask him if you're the media. And so Neil should be calling. It's malpractice to not be attempting to make that move.
Yeah.
And yet because he found him from Lehigh, he's not going to make the move.
So we talked about this a little bit on Thursday with Justin. Fentress and Gina Mizell had the kind of like the group piece and the quote that I talked about in there. Basically, somebody from the inside the Blazers organization, which I'm assuming at this point is probably Neil, just the way that it's phrased, was that there's this worry that Dame and Ben Simmons couldn't work together.
Couldn't coexist on the court.
Is batshit crazy. It's just insane. When you're talking, like, there's plenty of things you can talk about, like Ben Simmons' work ethic, how he would be able to fit into the Portland culture, being out of the big city. Like, those kind of things, those are valid valid questions. Like, do the Blazers want to deal with Clutch more? Like a preeminent clutch. Like, Nurk's a clutch player, but he's not a clutch guy. You know, like,
right.
He's not on the marquee. Like, it's Ben Simmons in big letters and then with Yusuf Nurkic on the marquee kind of deal. Ben is capital B, capital S, right? But the whole, like, would they fit together? If you're swapping CJ for Ben, the usage is there. Like, Ben is fitting right in as far as having the ball in his hands. Dame has spent his entire career essentially basically playing with CJ, a guy who has the ball in his hands a ton. So from that respect, that's insane. But here's the thing. I don't believe, just talking around, asking around, I firmly believe that Morey is locked in on Damian Lillard and is not willing to accept CJ yet.
It's not going to happen unless Dame demands it. It's just not happening.
And
but even then, can't be that stupid.
I genuinely believe that it's going to take, like, it's going to have to grind to a screeching halt in Philadelphia. Like, as bad as it looks right now, it's got to get bad. Like, Ben's going to have to, like, James Harden it. Like, James gave up money, didn't go to practice, was at the strip club. Like,
he met with their brass in Los Angeles and told them to their faces, Elton Brand, Daryl Morey, and Josh Harris, and said, F you guys, I'm done. I don't want to be there anymore. I don't know
how
do you make it worse?
No, he's got to go James Harden. I'm telling you. Remember, this is Philly. The Philly media, I think it was a Fox News affiliate in Philly, ran a clip where an actual evening news said, we've spotted Ben Simmons leaving the city of Philadelphia, and they showed a trash can floating down the river in flooded Philadelphia. Like, they want him gone. Now, here's the thing. If all of a sudden we're at training camp and Ben's not there, do you think it's going to get real loud?
Oh, yeah.
That's when
it ain't going to get quiet.
That's the thing. That's when the pressure is going to get turned up, and that's when every player, every coach, Daryl Morey, everyone is going to get asked about this, and it's just going to become toxic as hell. Because it got near that with Houston, with James Harden last year.
Yeah. He showed up late, remember? He showed up and...
when they basically had the framework for the deal. That's what changed. It's like, here, okay, I'll come back. I'll play nice soldier because I know you're calling Brooklyn right now and you're trying to get this done. That's what that was. Like, it was like, hey, let me get into game shape kind of a deal.
But I got a buddy that he works for WIP Sports Radio in Philly, and he does the afternoon show. He's really successful. And I talked to him from time to time, and I asked him, I was like, hey, I'm pretty sure Portland won't deal Dame unless Dame demands out.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys, or would the media, the fans, et cetera, would you guys want CJ McCollum? And he basically was like, we do not want CJ McCollum. We will be pissed if they settle for CJ McCollum, because they don't think CJ McCollum is anywhere near the player that Damian Lillard is. I don't blame him for the opinion, but that's where the fan and media reaction is at.
That's why it has to get toxic, why it has to get sideways, because Morey knows that. Because they spent this whole time, and don't get it twisted, Ben is a better player than CJ McCollum.
It's not even a debate.
No, CJ is a top 40 guy. Ben is a top 25 guy. If he gave a damn, is probably a top 50. He's the best defender in the NBA. That part of it is, that's it. He's the best defender in the NBA. He's probably one of the five best passers in the NBA.
I feel like those two skill sets alone should be putting you in the top 15.
But he's not giving a damn. Yes.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. We just talked about Marquese Chriss and Dennis Smith Jr. and not being able to stay in the league because they don't have a skill. We can talk about what Ben Simmons doesn't do until the cows come home, but what he does do, he's one of the best and the best at. And that's how a guy who's fundamentally broken, who can't shoot, who has mental breakdowns in games as far as not dunking and passing, all that crap, it does not matter. Because he's so good at the other things that you just figure it out, because it's a talent league. So as far as, like, would the Blazers consider trading for Simmons? I genuinely believe if CJ plus a first, CJ plus a first and Nas, if that was a palatable package for Philadelphia, I think Portland would do it. As much as I think Neil wants to hold on to CJ, I genuinely believe, because it's such a talent upgrade at things that you need, because they don't have, like, Dame's a very good playmaker, but he's a scorer. Ben is a no BS playmaker. That is what he does. That
at
is
six
his
freaking 10
getting downhill. He has created more 3-point looks than anybody else in the NBA. So here's a crazy stat for you. Ben Simmons doesn't shoot threes, right?
Nope.
So you would think his impact for shooting threes for the team.
Well, he doesn't pick up.
Well, yeah, of course he
when
does.
When he tweets out the video.
Yeah, of course he does. But with Ben Simmons on the floor, do you know what the 76ers shot from three as a team?
Oh, that's a great stat question. I'm going to say when Ben Simmons was on the floor, the Sixers shot 37%.
40%.
Woo!
Would have been for second in the NBA.
Yep.
Guess what they shot with Ben Simmons off the floor?
32.
28.
I wonder how did they get that 12%, Danny? Tell me.
It's weird. It's almost like Ben Simmons creates some of the best looks in the NBA from three.
It's wild.
Everybody, and this is the same thing about that everybody gets mad about Giannis. He needs to learn how to shoot.
Mad about Giannis. How do we get mad about Giannis?
He needs to learn how to shoot. He needs to be a better shooter. I don't disagree, but this is again like the whole idea of like Phil Beckner, like what he was talking about, like be great at things.
Yes.
Ben is one of three players in the NBA who, if they want to drive, there's not a damn thing you can do about it. It's LeBron, it's Ben, it's Giannis. If they want to get downhill, they're so damn big, so damn strong, and so explosive, there's nothing you can do. Nothing.
Maybe Kawhi when he's 100% healthy.
But again,
maybe,
like, you're talking about the best players in the league.
And LeBron is in this conversation, and we're talking about Ben Simmons.
Yes. Like, you can probably put Luka there, too, as far as there's, you're talking about MVPs.
Right.
That, and Ben is like in that group when it comes to getting downhill.
Franchise players.
And he gets downhill. He can pass to the right. He can pass to the left. He can pass on the move. He is a superlative-laden passer. There's nothing passing-wise that he can't do. There are actual limitations on Dame and CJ as passers and playmakers. Ben does not have those. And that's where I think a lot of this stuff gets lost. And I know we spent a ton of time on this. Curry, at Jacob Curry 22, do you think a Simmons trade will happen when Neil screw it up like he always does? I don't know
if he screws it up, though.
I want to dunk on Neil plenty, but I don't think this is a Neil thing as it sits right now.
Not yet. If Woj or Haynes or Stein or somebody,
if we hear
out,
CJ's of it not been included or something along those lines, then you riot.
Yeah, or Philly's like open to the idea of a non-Damian Lillard caliber player, just a scorer, a playmaker, and obviously CJ fits the billing of that. If that report comes
out, CJ is the preeminent guy. Let's not get it twisted.
Right.
Like, it's Dame, it's Beal. Those are the two guys that they want more than anything with Ben. But the next tier down, if you're talking about shot creating scorers, if you're not talking about Brandon Ingram with the size, and even then, I don't think he's the shot creator or playmaker that CJ can be. It's a significant drop. Like, if Oladipo was like Oladipo from 2 years ago, you could make that argument that maybe he's in that kind of group. But there's just
can I give you a very random one to just throw at you and just pick your brain? So I was thinking about this the other day of player caliber players available for Philly that are not Dame or Bradley Beal, and that you're so right. The list is not big. Let me just throw a hypothetical non-Blazer at you real quick. If you're Denver and you know you're getting Murray back, do you kick around the Michael Porter thing?
They still think Porter is all NBA caliber.
I don't disagree with them. I think he's good, but he hasn't reached it yet.
I think they trade
Murray
first.
Okay, see, that'd be an interesting move. But I was just thinking of non-CJ McCollum players, and I couldn't think of – I had to take myself to places it hadn't been yet.
Because they need a playmaker. They need
a playmaker.
More than anything, if Ben goes out, they need a playmaker.
And Jokic can shoot from three. Like, Jokic can shoot anywhere. So it's like, that's not a real problem for them.
Somebody mentioned something in the show when we had with Justin on. Like, when I asked Justin, you know, who is a better fit alongside Ben than Dame? And Steph was obviously the obvious answer. Somebody said in the comments after the show, Jokic in Denver. And I don't disagree, but here's why I don't think it's the best fit. Because Jokic wants the ball in the middle of the floor.
He wants to start near the block versus
at
the top. Yeah.
Or even at the elbow. If you have him there, that's right. an area occupied, which is a lot of like what Joel Embiid does, that doesn't really like hinder Ben, but it does neutralize him a little bit. But Jokic is such a supreme passer, you figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think that's very interesting, because let's say they did, for whatever reason, send Murray out. If the Nuggets ran 6'11 Jokic, 6'10 Michael Porter, 6'10 Ben Simmons, that's a particular kind of hell. I don't want to see anything along those lines for the Denver Nuggets. I have no interest in that.
No, I know. I don't want to get too sidetracked. I hope it gets to the point where Daryl and Philly have to say it's CJ's the best we're going to do. And it could still help our team. We could still be really good. Justin made some really good points of, despite losing Ben defensively, you can still be a good group because you have Matisse. You still have Danny Green. Like
Toby and Joel. Like, you still got guys that are like capable.
Yes, your group won't fall off quite as much as you think. And I thought that was a great point that I hadn't thought about. My concern really just, it boils down to Neil. And I don't know if Neil, you seem more optimistic that it could happen in dire straight situations. I just don't know if it can.
It's just one of those
things.
He's
never made that caliber of move.
No, and Morey has. Morey yes. has made those moves.
Like four times.
So this is, again, a lot of the Ben Simmons stuff. This is from Dave Myers at DEM 1976. How in the bloody hell can someone with eyeballs look at Ben Simmons and not immediately visualize the art that would result from playing alongside Dame? Please wildly speculate as to what could possibly be going through the unnamed source in the organization Fenter cited. So, yeah, I think we're getting a fair amount of that, in the sense of, yeah, there's not a, it's not a, not a, not a great idea, not a great look. Let me take this tremendous white glare off my face, because I'm gonna
say real quick before you finish, of all the poll questions I've seen, multiple outlets, us, my radio show, our radio station, Blazers Edge, like I feel like I've seen these kind of poll questions for the last year. When you do a poll, would you trade Ben Simmons for CJ? Would you put CJ in a sim? Like, it is overwhelming.
How many people say no?
See, I've seen the other one. Yes, yes, yes. And like the really? Last one we ran, it was like 88 to 12. Yes. People, I think people are done with this, man. I really think people...
I think they are, but I literally just saw one a little while ago.
Okay.
And it was like CJ in a first round pick, and like how many people said yes immediately? It was like 33%. I think there's like these pockets, and everybody gets in their own echo chambers of like,
sure.
You know, whether you listen to this station or you listen to this podcast or you listen right. to this show, like I think people find like there's the people who just want to hear the Blazers are great. Everything they do is great. And so trading CJ is a sin. It's, you know, hallowed be thy name, CJ. You know, it's sure. And there's other people who are like, CJ's a bum. And it's like, no, hold your break. Like it's it's like,
we don't need to go that far.
Like, there's a spot in between, guys. I promise you, he doesn't need to be sainted, and he doesn't need to be sent to hell. Like, there's a spot in between where we can go, hey, CJ's a damn good player.
Right.
Doesn't get maximized here in Portland. Ben Simmons. Okay.
Yeah.
Get into a couple email questions from Stephen Gray. I pocketed these for a little while, Stephen. So just because we had so much other stuff going on, I feel like I wanted to work these in later. This is from Stefan. Big fans of the pod. Is there a world where you can see Chauncey Billups being a real positive change, something like the transition from Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr, where they emphasize ball movement and moving Dame off ball, maybe even unlock Nurk the way Kerr did with Draymond? I just feel like the national media already put a fork in the team when there's an actual chance to play a lot better under the new philosophy. Thoughts?
I think to answer part of that, I think Chauncey hinted at it as presser. And I think we're going to see it and hear about it even more in a couple weeks when the team starts doing training camp. I would fully expect to watch them try to use Nurkic in a Nikola Jokic light version this season. Now, will they be able to do it all year? I don't know, because a lot of that's going to hinge on what Dame does and how okay Dame is with all of it. But I think from what Chauncey told us at the press conference, pair that with, remember, Nurkic post the playoff loss, he took shots at Stotts. I think he wants the ball more, and I think because of his passing ability, his ability to set good screens at the top of the key, I think we're going to see more Nurkic kind of be a distributor slash set some offensive sets go through him versus not seeing it as much with Terry.
So here's the thing I find a little bit funny here.
Yeah.
We're wondering whether or not Dame could, you know, play with Ben Simmons, but he's going to give the ball up to Nurk more.
I mean, you're identifying an obvious. I'm just saying I think that's what I think that's what they're going to try to do with Nurkic.
Listen, and don't get it wrong.
They could totally
I love it.
Do a Ben Simmons, but
listen, no, I love getting Nurk more involved. I have said that for years, getting him involved, particularly in the elbows and the high post, having them do some more high low actions, getting some other things. And here's this whole thing. Everybody thinks it's so very simple. Well, Dame just needs to move off ball. Dame could have moved off ball any time in the last 10 years. Anytime. Terry Stotts is not the authoritative dictator who has the all-encompassing force to make everything happen. I think there's this idea of what NBA coaches are and aren't that is nowhere close to reality.
I think they're personality managers almost more than anything else.
Yes. The X's and O's stuff, everybody for the most part runs the same stuff across the board. You have
little
wrinkles.
Teams know what each other's running.
Yeah, and you have little wrinkles here or there. It's personnel. Dame has said, I would love to get off ball. Then give the damn ball up, Dame. Give the ball up. Give the ball to Nurk in the middle of the floor and get him more involved and work less off the bounce. The thing is, he's not going to because he has not made that jump in his mind yet. He is not willing. Why? Because he's averaging 30 a game. He's putting up the he just had the best statistical season in Trailblazers history last year. Why the hell would he give the ball up?
Right.
And it was like, well, the Blazers would be better without. He just got a multi-million dollar deal. He is one of the most prolific athletes in the world doing what he has been doing. Why would he change it? Everybody wants to say, it's a simple fix. It's a simple fix. He got here doing it one way. Why would he change it?
It's turning into, you know, LeBron's going to push the pace and they're going to run fast up and down the court. And then every year we hear that. And what does LeBron do? Walks the ball up. Dribbles, passes, gets the ball back, and with 5 seconds, he shoots the ball. They can't change who they are. You can't change your stripes, man.
If it was easy to work off ball, we would have seen Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
So what do they say? Because here's the thing. I'm not going to be on asking Zoom questions. I'm not interested in it on a nightly basis.
I don't know if they want me asking Zoom questions this year.
Right, but say we're 30 games in and there's clearly no evidence that Nurk is being used differently or Dame's usage rate and the amount of times he's staying off the ball. Like, all of that stuff has not changed. Is anybody going to ask that question of, hey, I thought
you're
you
going to hear me click the button on raise hand in Zoom conference. Chauncey. Hi, Danny Marang. First time, long time.
Yeah. Remember when you said,
yeah,
it doesn't appear that that's happening. Like, they're not going to have an answer for that. And they're going to basically BS their way out.
I'm
going to
go full CJ McCollum and go, let me take a look at this paper here. I love how every time he's up there, he always grabs the stat sheet.
Always looks at the box score, yeah.
Good stuff. It's like, like, that's the first time, huh? Okay. I do think they're going to do some stuff there. I do. And this isn't to say that Dame can't change his stripes a little bit. I think, and that's where everybody wants to make these grand sweeping statements. If this, how about just a little bit? Let's get Dame to get the ball up a little bit. Let's get CJ to work off the ball a little bit.
Right.
Let's get Nurk a little bit more involved. Let's get Cove a little bit more involved. Let's get Norman Powell a little. Let's just everybody do a little bit more in some cases, and in some cases do a little bit less and see what we get. That's, I think, this whole idea of like there's just going to be this big paradigm shift because Chauncey came in. And I'm just like, and not to like poo-poo this at all, because I do think they could make some actual changes and things that could be impactful and helpful. That was never my reasoning for not like wanting to throw Stotts out on the street. My whole reasoning there was, no, they've been pretty damn successful. And if you look at the roster,
he's not a bad coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's solid. Like,
I always thought it was a roster problem personally, but you know, whatever. It reached the end.
Perfect example. Like, they were going to fire him. They were a KD shoe size away from firing Mike Budenholzer. So the Steve Kerr stuff, do I think Kerr's a good coach? Yes. Do I think that it's exaggerated to absurdity? Absolutely.
Well, it's clearly been that since the last couple of years. I mean, what were they last year, right? Like, and again, I think
they've
Kerr's
had injuries
coach.
And all this other stuff. But we also saw Luke Walton win 24 straight games with that team.
Mike Brown.
So, yeah, we've seen this story play out. And the whole idea of unlocking Draymond Green. Draymond Green was a non-factor with the Warriors until he started because David Lee went down. That's what happened. I mean, you had Steph get healthy. You had Klay take another. You had three Hall of Famers take huge steps.
Yep.
If the Blazers have three Hall of Famers take huge steps, guess what? Chauncey's going to look like a really damn good coach.
No kidding.
Listen, I'm all for it. Great. If CJ, Dame, Nurk, Norm, everybody, you know, these guys have the years of their careers, and Ant is the sixth man of the year candidate, and Larry Nance Jr. unlocks the second unit, and Cody Zeller plays all 82 games, and they have this fantastic front court rotation. Awesome. Great. It's very, very hard for me to see it happening.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. Went a little bit longer on the mailbag pod just because,
Well, we love basketball, and we love answering the questions.
We do. And thank you, everybody, for getting the questions in. As always, you can hit either Brandon or I or the Jack Ramsey's account up on Twitter. That's at Jack Ramsey's, at Danny Morang, or at Brandon Sprague. You can email the show at Jack Ramsey's at gmail.com. Brandon, what do you got coming this week, man?
We got a really busy week, man. We'll talk a little bit about the Simmons stuff on the radio show on 1080, 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, but this week is going to be...
You got foosball.
We got foosball. We got that foosball. We got the NFL kicking off on Thursday. Brady's going to kick Dallas's ass, which I'll quite enjoy. And
listen,
then,
everybody enjoys that. Let's be honest. I'm a Raiders fan, and I like enjoying it because the Raiders are going to play the Cowboys and also beat their ass. So
you either like the Cowboys or you hate the Cowboys. And then we got Oregon at Ohio State this week reacting to their Fresno State game that they almost lost.
Should have lost.
Oregon State losing to Purdue. Can they go 2-1 in non-conference? Who's their quarterback? And what the hell is going on in Seattle? Paired with Big Ball's Chip Kelly might be back and – how the South is kind of shaking out in the Pac-12. So it's going to be a
better
busy
than the
week
North.
Of football. Substantially better than the North, and I can't disagree with anything.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting in that regard. As always, folks, thank you so much. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. Like, rate, review, subscribe. That's on iTunes. That's on Google Podcasts. That's on Spotify. That's on YouTube. We are everywhere across the board. And again, thank you so much for the first month being an absolute
killer. Oh, it's been amazing.
Killer. I said, we finished top 30 in the world for NBA podcasts for the first month in the launch. Thank you all so much. Quick reminder, I need to be better about putting this at the beginning. RefugeeCare.org. All of the proceeds from the show this month are going to that charity. We also have a special note from a Ramsey family member.
We do. Give me 1 second. I'll pull it up real quick because I want to make sure.
We are, our namesake is Jack Ramsey, obviously after Dr. Jack Ramsey. And we did seek permission from the Ramsey family to use the Ramsey name. And this is what we got.
So I emailed his son, Chris. I got his email from our good friend, Michael Llewellyn, who is a really good friend. He works at UP. He used to work for the Blazers. And he passed along. And so we reached out to make sure everything is all copacetic with using the Ramsey name. And he said, thanks for reaching out. Appreciate what you're doing with the pod. Please use the name in good faith. Also, if you could, please promote on your platform, maybe once a month, the Africa Outreach USA charity. It's a charity that his dad, Jack Ramsey, actually helped launch. And they're trying to help kids in Africa live better lives through sports, especially basketball, and to be able to help being taken care of. So the link that he gave me was in AOUSA website, and it's AfricaOutreachUSA.org. That's AfricaOutreachUSA.org. Any donations would be very welcomed. And just to throw that out there, we'll probably do that once a month here on the pod because we do respect the Ramsey name a lot. That's why it's in the name of the podcast. And so that's a charity that means an awful lot to the family itself, AfricaOutreachUSA.org.
And in all likelihood, we'll probably do what we did for the refugee fund here, probably for that charity as well. As I said,
absolutely.
We want to take this, and don't get me wrong, Brandon and I both want to make some money from this, and it's growing at a pace that, guess what, it's making money already. So, but we want to be able to take and give that stuff back because that's part of what this stuff is all about. And you guys, we're trying to foster and build a community here. Love it, hate it. Listen, I love folks that hate watch the show, that hate watch the podcast, hate listen to the podcast. God bless you. You're all the best. So again, if you have the capacity, if you have the ability, I know it's tough times for a lot of people out there. The thing is, it's tougher for people outside of this country. So, Thank you all so, so, so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Remember, like, rate, review, subscribe, follow everything. And we'll have the live show on Thursday. I'm very, very close to booking guests in. I'm getting follow-up after Labor Day.
Nice.
And then we will know who, what, when, and where, and why. So keep those questions coming. And we'll catch you guys next time, guys. Bye.